Welcome to The Patriot, 1776. Hi, this is John Mady, and I am the pastor of Victory Baptist Church in North Fort Myers, Florida. And who is the Patriot of 1776? You are, and I am, and so is everyone who loves America and wants to follow the principles of our founding fathers. The last sentence of the Declaration of Independence reads like this: "And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." If it had not been for the Patriots of 1776, we would still be paying taxes to England and drinking a spot of tea at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Help us win back America now, just like the Patriots of 1776 won America in the first place. You should take notes and use your Bible. We will give you our mailing address later. America is the greatest country that has ever existed, and we're going through some things to find out how America has been great and finding out other things that are happening to destroy America. We've gone through the Magna Carta, and that date on that is 1215. That helped to get started the freedom that we have. The next thing in line that was an important date was 1611, and that was the King James Bible. And then in 1769, we talked about Blackstone's commentaries. And then for 1848, we talked about the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx and Engels, Friedrich Engels. And now today, we're going to get started. I don't know how much we'll be able to get through, but we're going to get started on The Law. This was a book written in 1850. And most of this is going to be just the one book, and it started out as a pamphlet. But the thing that's interesting about it is the man, Friedrich Bastiat, who wrote it. And we're going to learn about him, and we're going to learn about his background, and we're going to look at some, read some of his book, The Law. And so we're going to get started. I don't know if we'll be able to finish all of this today, but we'll get started with it. And so we look at this. I'm taking this from the Mises Institute, Australian Economics, Freedom, and Peace. So you might look that up on the internet, Mises, M-I-S-E-S, Mises Institute. And the article of interest is the biography of Friedrich Bastiat. He was born in 1801, and he died in 1850. And so let's begin reading about him. And periodically, we may stop and just talk about some things. Quote, "Claude Friedrich Bastiat was a French economist, legislator, and writer who championed private property, free markets, and limited government. Perhaps the main underlying theme of Bastiat's writings was that the free market was inherently a source of economic harmony among individuals, as long as government was restricted to the functioning of protecting the lives, liberties, and property of the citizens from theft or aggression. To Bastiat, government coercion was the only limit if it served to guarantee security of person, liberty, and property rights to cause justice to reign over all. Bastiat emphasized the planned coordination, faction, and function of the free market, a major theme of the Austrian school because his thinking was influenced by some of Adam Smith's writings and by the French free market economists." Unquote. I'm going to stop there just for a second to say that Adam Smith was also a man who wrote a book, and he talks about this book of being the world's wealth. And in talking about that book, Adam Smith, that book was used a lot in our colleges. And so that's a good book, too. So there's another book for us to look at sometime. That's a big, thick book. But it talks about finances and how finances work. All right, let's go on. Quote, Bastiat's intellectual background. Bastiat was orphaned at age 10 and was raised and educated by his paternal grandparents. He left school at age 17 to work in the family exporting business in the town of Bayonne. Now remember, he's French, so Bayonne is in France, where he learned firsthand the evils of protectionism by observing at the closed-down warehouses the declining population and the increased poverty and the unemployment caused by trade restrictions. When his grandfather died, Bastiat, at age 25, inherited the family estate at Mougroon, which enabled him to live the life of a gentleman farmer and scholar for the next 20 years. Bastiat hired people to operate the family farm so he could concentrate on his intellectual pursuits. He was a voracious reader, and he discussed and debated with friends virtually all forms of literature. His closest friend was his neighbor, Felix. Felix and Bastiat worked their way through a tremendous number of books on philosophy, history, politics, religion, travel, poetry, political economy, biography, and so on. It was in these conversations that the ideas of Bastiat developed and his thoughts matured. Initially a follower of Rousseau, and like most of Rousseau's admirers, his friend, then as now, was a socialist. But Bastiat, who always said he preferred a one-on-one conversation to giving a speech to thousands of people, converted Caudreuil to classical liberalism. Bastiat first published, by the way, classical liberalism, that's the same as what we say today is conservatism. All right, let's go on. Bastiat's first published article appeared in April of 1834. It was a response to a petition by the merchants of Bordeaux, La Hève, and Lyons to eliminate tariffs on agricultural products, but to maintain them on manufacturing goods. Bastiat praised the merchants for their position on agricultural products, but excoriated them for their hypocrisy in wanting protectionism for themselves. "You demand privilege for a few," he wrote, "whereas I demand liberty for all." He then explained why all tariffs should be abolished completely. In this article, Bastiat first displayed his mastery of the accumulated wisdom of the economists of the pre-Austrian tradition and established himself as a brilliant synthesizer and organizer of economic ideas. He immediately gained national and international fame, and as a fellow advocate of free trade, he began a friendship with Richard Cobden, a leader of British Anti-Corn Law League. Oh boy. Which succeeded. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that how these things affect us so much. Which succeeded in abolishing all trade restrictions in England by 1850. Bastiat organized a similar organization in France, the French Free Trade Association, which was instrumental in France's elimination of most of its trade barriers in 1860, 10 years after Bastiat's death. Bastiat was especially effective in spreading his influence as editors of the Free Trade Association's newspaper. After 20 years of intense intellectual preparation, articles began to pour out of Bastiat and soon took the form of his first book, Economic Sophisms, which to this day is still arguably the best literary defense of free trade available. He quickly followed with his second book, Economic Harmonies, and his articles were reprinted in newspapers and magazines all over France. In 1846, he was elected a corresponding member of the French Academy of Science, and his work was immediately translated into English, Spanish, Italian, and German. Free trade associations soon began to sprout up in Belgium, Italy, Sweden, Prussia, and Germany, and were all based on Bastiat's French Free Trade Association. Government plunder. This is an important subject. Just close quotes here for a minute. Government plunder is a subject, a great important subject, simply because if it was not government doing it, individual people doing the same thing that government does, those individual people would be arrested. And so Bastiat's argument for this is that if individual people shouldn't do it, then government shouldn't do it either. So here we go. Quote, government plunder. While establishing the inherent harmony of voluntary trade, Bastiat also explained how government resource allocation is necessarily antagonistic and destructive of free markets' natural harmony. Since government produces no wealth of its own, it must necessarily take from some to give to others. Robbing Peter to pay Paul is the essence of government, as Bastiat described it. Moreover, as special interest groups seek more and more of other people's money through the state, they undermine the productive capacities of the free market by engaging in politics rather than in productive behavior. The state, wrote Bastiat, is the great fictitious entity by which everyone seeks to live at the expense of everyone else. Bastiat is perhaps best known for his work in the field of political economy, the study of the interaction between the economy and the state, as opposed to pure economic theory. He sought to understand how the state operated, what incentives drive it, and he did so as well as anyone ever has. There is no space here for an in-depth discussion of Bastiat's ideas on political economy, but a few examples will suffice. Government was necessary, according to Bastiat, but only if restricted to its essential functions. He believed that no society can exist unless the laws are respected to a certain degree, but at the same time, that could only occur if the laws themselves were respectable. The moral justification for a law, moreover, can never be based on a majority vote, because since no individual has the right to enslave another individual, then no group of individuals can possibly have such a right. All income distribution through majoritarian democracy is therefore legal plunder and is, by definition, immoral. Bastiat also saw through the phony philanthropy of the socialists, who constantly proposed helping this or that group or this or that person by plundering the wealth of other innocent members of society through the state, through government. All such schemes are based on legal plunder, organized injustice. Like today's 19th century socialists that brand conservatives with the name individualist, implying that conservatives are opposed to fraternity, community, and association. But as Bastiat astutely pointed out, he was only opposed to forced associations and was an advocate of genuine, voluntary communities and associations. Every time that we object to a thing being done by government, the socialists conclude that we object to its being done at all. Bastiat not only believed that collectivism constituted legal plunder, he also believed that private property was essential to fulfill man's nature as a free being who, by nature, acts in his own self-interest to satisfy wants. To argue against the right to private property would be to argue that theft and slavery were morally correct. Thus, the protection of private property is the primary, if not the only legitimate function of government. The politician has no authority over our persons and our property, since they pre-exist him, and his task is to surround them with guarantees. Bastiat authored what is to this day the strongest defense of free trade ever produced. His case was built on myriad economic concepts, but what the case for free trade really comes down to has never been a question of custom duties, but a question of right, of justice, of public order, of property. In economic sophisms, Bastiat masterfully created the most complete case for free trade ever constructed up to that time. Bastiat was a genius at explaining all these economic principles and outcomes by use of satire and parables, the most famous of which is the Candlemaker's Petition. This is good. Which requested a law to mandate the covering of all windows and the covering of all skylights and other openings, holes, and cracks through which the light of the sun is able to enter houses. This free sunlight is hurting the business of us deserving manufacturers of candles. And that's the gist of the whole story. And this is why we need to be careful and have more free trade. Because the candle maker, that's the kind of a law that there are a lot of those laws. Just before we left Seattle and moved down to Florida, there was a county that was nearby that decided that they would start charging people to get a permit. They would start charging people $40. And with that permit, it gave people the right to purchase a new water heater. Now, why would that ever be? I have no idea. Now, I want to get started on his book and just read a couple of things from his book, The Law. If you get this book, The Law, it is a great, great book. And you will certainly learn some of the basics. And you read this book and you say, why are we doing these things in the United States that are more like the Communist Manifesto than we are doing the law? Okay? Now, at the beginning of the book, it just talks about the law and author. And so we'll read that because there's some information in there that would be interesting to you. When a reviewer wishes to give special recognition to a book, he predicts that it will still be read 100 years from now. The Law, first published as a pamphlet in June 1850, is already more than 100 years old. And because its truths are eternal, it will still be read when another century has passed. And when we consider 1850, 1950, and now 2016, so now we've got over 150 years, over 160 years into this book. And then it says Frederick Bastiat was a French economist, statesman, and author. He did most of his writing during the years just before and immediately following the Revolution of February, 1848. This was the period when France was rapidly turning to complete socialism. As a deputy to the Legislative Assembly, Mr. Bastiat was studying and explaining each socialist fallacy as it appeared, and he explained how socialism most inevitably degenerate into communism. But most of his countrymen chose to ignore his logic. The law is here presented again because the same situation exists in America today as in the France of 1848. The same socialist communist ideas and plans that were then adopted in France are now sweeping America. The explanation and arguments then advanced against socialism by Mr. Bastiat are, word for word, equally valid today. His ideas deserve a serious hearing. Unquote. And so there are a lot of good things here that are said. It's amazing today. Most people do not understand the things that are communistic in our country, and we just accept them. We don't give them a second thought. And so he's going to hit some of those things in this book, and we're going to read some of those things, and some of them you won't recognize by the name, and other things you will recognize them. So as we go through this, just know that we're just touching on these books, and these are recommendations that I'm making to you. The name of this book is The Law, and the author is Friedrich Bastiat, Bastiat. And so let me read some of this. And the first little bit that we're going to read is his opening paragraph. It says, "The law pervert." The law perverted, and the police powers of the state perverted along with it. The law, I say, not only turned from its proper purpose, but made to follow an entirely contrary purpose. The law became the weapon of every kind of greed. Instead of checking crime, the law itself, guilty of the evils it is supposed to punish. If this is true, it is a serious fact, and moral duty requires me to call the attention of my fellow citizens to it. Life is a gift from God. We hold from God the gift which includes all others. This gift is life, physical, intellectual, and moral life. But life cannot maintain itself alone. The Creator of life has entrusted us with the responsibility of preserving, developing, and perfecting it." And so he's telling us that it's a gift. And then he goes on in the next page. Life, faculties, production, in other words, individuality, liberty, property, this is man. And in spite of the cunning of the artful political leaders, these three gifts from God precede all human legislation and are superior to it. Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused man to make laws in the first place. What is law? What then is law? It is a collective organization of individual right to lawful defense. Each of us has a natural right from God to defend his person, his liberty, and his property. These are the three basic requirements of life, and the preservation of any one of them is completely dependent upon the preservation of the other two. For what are our faculties but the extension of our individuality? And what is property but an extension of our faculties? If every person has the right to defend, even by force, his person, his liberty, and his property, then it follows that a group of men have the right to organize and support a common force to protect these rights constantly. Thus, the principle of collective right, its reason for existence, its lawfulness, it's based on individual right. So as close quote. As we have police and we have firemen and we have armies, those are only extensions of what we have as individuals. And so we have those things to protect all of us. And because of that, it's all based, know this, understand this, it's all based on the individual right that God has given us to protect ourselves. Okay, let's go back. Quote, "And the common force that protects this collective right cannot logically have any other purpose or any other mission than that for which it acts as a substitute. Thus, since an individual cannot lawfully use force against the person, liberty, or property of another individual, then the common force, for the same reason, cannot lawfully be used to destroy the person, liberty, or property of individuals or groups. And this common force is to do only what the individual forces have a natural and lawful right to do, to protect persons, liberties, and properties, to maintain the right of each, and to cause justice to reign over us all." And so, we're not going to have much more time. We'll just kind of close this down a little bit and just let you know that if you understand these concepts of freedom, you'll better be able to know when government is trying to take things away from us, when government is trying to take away our freedom. And the biggest thing that they do to take away our freedom is to give us free stuff. Free stuff to be a Santa Claus to all of us. So comes the end of today's message. We appreciate so much that you spent time to be with us. If you enjoy our program, would you please take time to send us any questions you might have, along with a love offering of any amount? And if you send at least $25, we will send you a 92-page book, When Good Men Do Nothing, Who Will Speak? Our address is The Patriot, 1776 at 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Again, The Patriot, 1776. The address is 14505 Nathan Hale Lane, North Fort Myers, Florida, 33917. Talk to you again next time. Goodbye now.